Welcome to the Impact 360 Institute podcast, where our goal is to explore biblical worldview and servant leadership to equip you for everyday influence. Here's your host, author and director of cultural engagement, Jonathan Morrow.
Welcome to the Impact 360 Institute podcast. I'm really honored to have a special guest with us today. Dr. George Yancey is a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas. He's the author of numerous books, including Compromising Scholarship, Religious and Political Bias in American Higher Education, and Dehumanizing Christians, Cultural Competition in a Multicultural World, as well as the book So Many Christians, So Few Lions, and then also the book we're going to be primarily talking about today, Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. His teaching and research focus on race and religion, and he blogs at several places, including The Stream, as well as Pathos Blog. So, Dr. Yancey, it's great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, wonderful. Well, I'm excited to talk about your research, and I think it'll be a fascinating conversation. One of the things we do with Impact 360 here is we work a lot with high school and college students and equipping parents. We have a Christian gap year. We do summer things like summer events and worldview and apologetics and leadership training. So the insights that you have, I think, will be really helpful to our audience as they think through this season and kind of where we're at as a culture. So let me start by kind of asking, you know, why did you write the book, Hostile Environment? Kind of what was the pathway that led you to that?
What led me to that was some of my previous research. My research that really documented what I would call Christianophobia, or the fear or hatred of Christians. The research showed it was a very real thing. And as a Christian, I thought it was something I wanted to write for the church so that people in the church can know about what's out there, the nature of it, and that we as Christians can think about how we can address it. You know, address it obviously in a way to protect ourselves, but also address it in a way that would further the kingdom of God.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So the word you've kind of coined there, and that might be new to people and they might even be surprised by it a little bit, is Christianophobia. So maybe just define that for us first, and then we can talk a little bit more about it.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, obviously, Christianophobia comes from the same root words as homophobia or Islamophobia, and they all mean, you know, having an unrealistic hatred or fear of a certain group. And in this case, it's Christians. It doesn't mean it's exactly like those things. It manifests itself differently. But when I was doing my research, when I was reading comments of individuals who expressed this sort of hatred or fear, it just occurred to me that this was the right term to capture that. The term predated my use of it, but is usually used more globally, internationally, with some obvious hatred, you know, killings and imprisonments of Christians, stuff like this. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about some of the biases, some of the prejudice, some of the discriminations that Christians may face today, even here in the United States, even though it's not the same thing as being in the Middle East or something like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting you bring up. You know, I was reading along in your book, and I was fascinated. On page 12 of your book, you said this, and I'd love for you to kind of unpack a little bit of this. You said this, says, I have encountered more barriers in academia because of my faith than because of my race. And I just thought that was a really interesting observation. I'd love to hear you kind of unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. You know, as an African-American, I, of course, have faced racism, and it's still around today. But in academia, I really don't think that I face the sort of racism that we think about. You know, I'm sure that it's come some sort of subtle ways, but not very strong. I have had people question my competency, not because I was black, but because I was a Christian. I have had people question whether I could be biased, not because I was black, but because I was a Christian. So in academia, I face more problems as a Christian than I do as an African-American.
Okay, yeah, no, that's, I think it's really interesting, you know, to hear your perspective on that. You know, as a sociologist, I'm sure you love trends and kind of answering the why questions as well as kind of the what questions. And so maybe even back up a little bit. Like, are there certain things kind of under the surface or certain undercurrents that have kind of led us to this point historically that's kind of caused this Christianophobia?
You know, I've been toying around some research on that. I mean, that sort of longitudinal question is hard to answer. But there is some data that may shed some light on it. And so probably what I would say at this point is I think that we've probably already always had some group of individuals with this sort of hatred or anger. Maybe it's grown, maybe it's not grown, but we've always had them. What I think has changed is that they've gained power. Hmm. Some of my research seems to suggest that they've gained economic power. And I think that that has been a big game changer. And so it's much more present. The effects of it is out there. And, of course, when people have power, they can spread it more effectively. So I think that's what's happened. But although, you know, I'm still kind of wondering, you know, trying to how this develops, I'm still trying to work that out.
Now, that's really interesting. You know, one of the things that you kind of talk about through the book is you actually talk about some right approaches and maybe wrong approaches to kind of engage the kind of Christophobia that we're seeing. Could you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I think Christians either go one or two directions too far and make mistakes. I think one direction is to just deny that it happens and deny that it's a problem. And, you know, and I've documented in some of my other research that, yeah, there is a discrimination against Christians in certain settings, not in all settings, but in certain settings in our society. The other direction I think Christians go too far is when they overemphasize it. You know, they talk about being persecuted. You know, I think about Christians in the Middle East under ISIS as persecution. Mm-hmm. I know that's not the only place it happens, but, I mean, that's a good example of it. You know, I don't think Christians in the United States as being persecuted. I think that they face bias and discrimination and sometimes are unfairly treated. But I don't think, I think saying that we're being persecuted goes too far.
So in some ways, what I'm hearing you say is we need to recognize a real and significant issue and trend, but we don't need to overdo it. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, I think we need to be careful not to overdo it.
Yeah, and so, you know, how has this research and kind of some of your insights been received, you know, from more of an academic standpoint or even some of your peers or things like that? Do they see this as well, even though they may not either be a Christian or religious in nature? Or what's their been a response to this?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think many academics tend to blow off some of their findings and some even justify why Christians should be discriminated against, which is what you would expect in an environment where it's occurring, that people justify what they're doing. But there are some that says, oh, yeah, you know, this may be a problem. I do think that, you know, there's a lot of work that has to be done to really reveal this problem to the larger society. Most people in society think of Christians as a majority group because that's what they have been and in some ways still continue to be. But there are changing dynamics. And there are, you know, the people with Christianophobia tend to be quite powerful in many ways. And so we have to be aware of that as well as other issues that we're confronting in society.
No, that's really helpful. As a professor, what are some of the trends you're seeing on the college campus today for students as they experience this kind of firsthand? Like, what are you seeing, I guess, on the ground as a university professor?
Well, you know, at the University of Texas, I don't see a lot. I mean, I think there's some of it here. I mean, people talk about stereotypes and Christians in stereotypical ways and things of that nature. But on a national level, you can see it in things such as the all-comers policy, which is this policy that you cannot use religion as a criteria for your club leadership. And so a Christian club cannot say, we only want Christians to lead our club. And this policy has been used to get certain Christian groups kicked off campus. So you can see it in some things such as that. There is research that shows that on campus, not my research, but other research that shows that on campus, that conservative Christians do face a certain degree of hostility, a hostile environment, if you will. So, you know, you can see it in certain college campuses, the way things are playing itself out.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. And I'm talking to Dr. George Yancey today, author of a really important book, Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. But you wrote an article on the stream that talked about a particular case of InterVarsity, even last month in October. Can you share a little bit more about kind of what was going on in that particular instance?
Yeah, that InterVarsity basically was saying, you know, we believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. That's our theology. And if you have a problem with that, then, you know, we're a ministry, therefore you may not want to work with us. And, you know, sounds reasonable. I mean, people can disagree, but, I mean, obviously a ministry should be able to say what its theology is. And there was a backlash against that. And so I wrote a stream article saying, look, you know, InterVarsity should have the right to define their own theology. And, you know, if you don't like that, if you don't like what they have to say theologically, there are other ministries you can work with. And so I find that very interesting, that individuals who talk about separation of church and state and that we should not interfere with ministries, and yet they were with InterVarsity. And so I wanted to defend them.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think that's interesting. So it seems as though there's kind of a double standard, you know, and without falling into that kind of overdoing it, I think we can recognize sometimes kind of obvious double standards when it comes to this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I try to challenge people on is, if the situation was reversed, how would you feel? And sometimes, you know, if the situation was reversed, we feel the same way. But if you don't, then there's hypocrisy there. And so, you know, it's hard for me to believe that if you're going into, say, people will be so free to talk about, say, Muslims changing their theology for their ministries on campus. So, yeah, I think that there's a real problem, and a lot of people are, I think, are blind to it.
Do you think that this Christianophobia has had an effect on Christians? Do you think they're maybe less likely to speak up or say things they really believe in today's kind of cultural environment?
Yeah, I think that is the case. I think that Christians are a little bit blinded to what's happening, but those that are not, they're afraid to speak their minds. I know in my classes sometimes Christians are less likely to speak up than non-Christians because they feel that their opinion will not be respected.
Yeah, and you know, as we get to work with a lot of students here at Impact 360, you know, as we send them on to finish the rest of their college experience at various universities and all over the country, and so those are the kind of things we're hearing as well is, you know, whether it was a professor who just kind of feels very free to kind of rail against, say, religion in general and Christianity in particular, or some current news item or something like that, the students don't feel like, hey, this maybe there's safe spaces for other people, but there's not a safe space for me right now.
Yeah, you know, and I personally am not a fan of safe spaces in general. I think in college you should be confronted with all different ideas, and you should deal with all different ideas. And so I'm not sympathetic to Christians who don't want to deal with alternative ideas. However, having said that, everyone should. And so, you know, whenever groups of students have tended to want to have a safe space or tend to not deal with ideas, I fight against that as well. Because I believe my Christian faith can stand up against scrutiny. And if I believe that, then I should not fear scrutinization. And I should think that scrutinization would help my Christian faith and my Christian ideals. And so that's the sort of environment I want in college.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's the way we approach things here. I was encouraged when I came across the University of Chicago, kind of their kind of stance on it, the letter that went out from their dean of students talking about some of these very issues that, you know, people need to, you know, encounter ideas that might make you uncomfortable, and that's okay. And then you have to actually work through it and think about these things. So I think it's a really, really important thing that we need to see happening. One of the things I was going to ask you about as well was how, as Christians, in a specifically Christian environment, you know, are trying to embody more a Christ-like attitude, how do we know kind of when to turn the other cheek, like you talk about, and when to kind of call things out and actually, you know what, actually, I can't stay silent right now. I shouldn't just let this go. So talk a little bit about that and maybe even give us maybe an illustration of what that
Yeah, means. I mean, that's real tough, you know, and I wish I had the answer. I mean, here's kind of the criteria that I try to use, and I fail so many times, so let me just say that up front. But I try to say if it's a personal insult against me, then I probably should turn the other cheek. You know, if someone doesn't like me, then that's what I should think about. I should probably turn the other cheek and be gracious. But if it is an attack on qualities that I have that would affect other individuals, such as an African-American, if it is a racist attack, then I think I probably need to confront that because it's not just about me at that point. I should not let stand something that's going to affect other African-Americans. Likewise, I'm of the opinion that if it's an attack on Christians for the sake as Christians, then I probably should not let it stand. So an attack on me as a Christian could encourage Christianophobia. And so that's sort of the dividing line that I try to use. And like I said, I'm imperfect in doing this, but I think that's a principle that I try to employ.
Yeah, no, I think that's really helpful because, I mean, what I hear you saying is, look, if it's just about me, then you know what? You know, I'm supposed to love my enemy. I'm supposed to absorb that. I'm supposed to seek their highest good. But if it's actually going to bring possible harm and other things to other people, then I do need to speak up, even if it's uncomfortable or not popular. So I really, really appreciate kind of your insights on that for sure. One of the things that was interesting is, you know, sometimes people bring up this idea of, you know, our public square should be religiously neutral. Is that possible for people to be religiously neutral in our culture today, and should they be? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think in this changing world, at one point, Christians could think about being the public square and basically controlling the public square. In this changing world, that's not going to happen. But what I think Christians should think about is having a seat at the table. In other words, we have a right to be in the public square, just like anyone else. And this doesn't sound like much, except lots of people with Christianophobia really don't want Christians to have a seat at the public table, and we can see some efforts to kick Christians out of the seat at the public table. The all-comers policy, I think, is part of that. It's one thing to say, well, Christians should not have the only student groups, and they shouldn't have special privileges. It's another thing to say, we're going to create rules so that Christians are not represented among the student organizations. That's taking Christians out of the public square, and that's the sort of things we have to fight against.
Yeah, that's helpful. You know, you brought up a word, and I think sometimes there's confusion about it, even what it means and if it's a good or a bad thing. But you said the word bias. And so first question, I guess, is maybe define it for us. What does it mean to be biased? And then maybe talk about is it ever good to be biased, or is there another way, or is there a way forward that you would kind of encourage around that?
Well, I mean, the general definition of bias is that we favor some groups or some thing over another. And you know, we're all biased to a certain extent, in a certain way. I have a very young child. When he grows up, I hope he's biased to marrying another Christian. You know, so that's the bias. The problem is when bias is not warranted. So, for example, if I'm hiring someone, you know, for a job as a college professor, it literally should not matter what the religion is. Even as a Christian, I should say, it literally should not matter. Are they the best person for this particular job? Because if the religion matters, then I'm biased in an unfair way. And, you know, as my research shows, Christians face an unfair bias in academia because conservative Christians, at least conservative Protestants, are going to be judged more harshly than other individuals, according to my research.
Are you aware of maybe what the latest numbers are on maybe the percentage of Christians in faculty positions in colleges today? Is there any research that you've come across or seen recently that kind of gives kind of some percentages on that?
You know, I've not looked at the very latest, but, you know, when you ask questions like that, it depends on how it's measured, too. Are you measuring people who say they're Christians? Are you measuring people who have certain beliefs, have more conservative beliefs, or who attend church regularly, or things of this nature? So, you know, that would matter. If it just says they're Christians, then I think we're probably talking around 20-30%. But once you start asking, you know, questions such as, what do they believe about the Bible or Jesus or something like that, they'll get much, much lower.
So would you put that maybe under 10%, would you say? Is that fair? Or,
you know, if you're using the more strict definition, then that would not surprise me at all.
That's just interesting. I think, you know, we get to work with a lot of parents, and sometimes they're just kind of, honestly, kind of scared about the college campus and the environment and what they see that doing to some of their students when they go there. Maybe they're not prepared, or they come out the other side of it almost in some ways, ideologically at least, a completely different person. So what advice might you have for parents as they're about to send their teenagers off to college? Like, what are some things that you would share with them?
Well, I really do think that you need to talk about faith and apologetics and those sort of issues and some of the worldviews you're going to encounter before you send them off to school. Of course, they're not going to get the full menu of what they're going to experience, but you need to prepare people. You need to give them some idea of what they may encounter, some of the arguments they may face, and talk that through. I think too many times we have our kids in youth groups that are fun and engaging, but don't engage them in deep thought. And then they go off to college, and they're not ready for, you know, the rigors of college just in general, academically, but also some of the ideas they're going to encounter and some of the resistance they're going to face. And I think that prepping your kids ahead of time is incredibly valuable.
Yeah, we couldn't agree more. That's honestly one of the things I get up in the morning and go to bed at night thinking about is how do we better equip, you know, our students to own their faith. And we try to do some of those kind of things with high school students, like one of our two-week summer camp experiences called Immersion, where we actually talk about other worldviews, but then we don't leave in the classroom. We'll actually go visit the mosque and have them present to our students on what they believe, and they get to interact. And then for many of them, it's the first time they've ever interacted with somebody who believes differently than they have, kind of in that context. And they go, wait a second, there is a real difference between what they believe about Jesus and what we believe about Jesus. And Yeah, actually had a respectful conversation. This is great. You know, and so I'm so with you that, I mean, we have to kind of maybe re-envision some of the way we think about youth group. I mean, I'm all for fun and all those kind of things, but we've got to, from what I'm hearing you say and what you're writing about in this book, Hostile Environment, I think some people are kind of naive about what students are walking into on the college campus. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, and, you know, one of the other things that I've been working on a little bit off and on is last year my church had a youth apologetics conference, and I'm hoping that we can do that again because I would like to see more churches do something like that. You only need one or two churches in a large metropolitan area that will advertise it and bring youth from all over the area to come to that church and then just get a basic taste of the argument for Christianity or not. And so I think that, you know, if nothing else, when they encounter that person who's a Marxist, or they encounter that, you know, agnostic, or they encounter the person who's in scientism, then they won't be surprised by those arguments, and then they'll even know, and they'll also know how to assess when a person really has authority to speak on something. When your English professor tells you that Jesus Christ never existed, you know, you could know that, or you know a lot about literature, I need to learn Shakespeare from you, but maybe not this.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I think that's a great idea. I'd love to see a resurgence of movement. I'm encouraged by some of that beginning to happen more and more, and I think in some ways as our culture becomes more, I think it'll just become more clear. I think the little, as some have put it, the mushy middle or the nominal middle is going to evaporate more and more in the days ahead, and I think it'll just be more clear, kind of, okay, do I really think this is true and real as Christianity or not? Is that kind of what you're seeing, that kind of middle, kind of American apple pie Christianity is beginning to kind of go away? Is that kind of what you're...
Well, what might happen, you know, in the new post-Christian society is that if you're a Christian, you're going to be a Christian. Nominal Christianity may be what dies. Because I don't think they're going to kill off Christians who are serious about their faith. But nominal Christianity may well die. And some people say that's not a bad thing. Although it is going to mean a smaller church. If you're just going to get used to the fact that church is going to be smaller than it used to be and not as many Christians, because if that happens and there's a lot less nominal Christianity, then you have fewer Christians out there.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, and I think it's an important thing to keep an eye on because we always inhabit a particular cultural space as Christians. Every generation has a different intersection of faith and culture, and this happens to be ours, and so we've got to pray for wisdom and try to apply these principles. But if you were going to talk to a young person out there and you were going to kind of cast vision for them on how they can be a positive influence in our culture today, what are some of the things you might say to them as a young person who wants to take their faith in Christ seriously and make a positive influence in today's culture, even in the midst of the Christianophobia and things like that?
You know, some of what we are talking about, you got to know what you believe and why. But also, you know, I think that the world does want to see Christians live an authentic faith. You know, they don't want us to say one thing and do something else, to not live out our values. And, if they, you know, then they won't respect us if we don't do that. And so, you know, striving to live out one's values, striving to live in a community, to find Christian friends, you know, around one, and to love and support them as well, and help them to love and support others, non-Christians alike. Now, I think that we're going into a different era where you're not going to see Christian society per se, but we could have Christian community where we are a counterculture to the rest of society. And as a witness to the rest of society by our actions and by our community, rather than, you know, having this overarching Christian society, which I don't think we're going to have in the near future.
No, I think that's really insightful and helpful, wise counsel for sure. I think some of those, you know, demographics and some of those experiences are going to change for this generation, and that's okay. Jesus is still risen, you know, Christ is still on his throne, but we've got to be able to move into that and be faithful in the midst of it. What are some things coming down the road for you? Are there any projects or research that you'd like to work on or you are working on that you're excited about?
Well, you know, I'm working on a few articles. My larger project, though, is trying to establish a Christian Studies Center at the University of North Texas, because I believe that one of the things that we have to have is we have to have Christian influence in cultural, mainstream cultural institutions. You know, it's great to have Christian colleges, but if we don't have something similar to Jewish studies or Islamic studies in non-Christian schools, then it's easy to have a culture that disregards Christians and creates these sort of caricatures of us. And so that's something that I hope to do. And then, you know, obviously I would love to study Christianophobia on a large scale with what we call a probability sample. That takes a lot of money, though, so I have to see if I can raise money somehow to do that. But, you know, those are some things I would like to eventually do.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think one of the interesting things is most people probably don't think of it that way, whereas, okay, there is a, you know, the chair of Islamic studies at, you know, this university and these kinds of things where they're doing work in that area. I think people just assume, okay, we got the Christianity thing, you know, in Sunday school and all that maybe perhaps, and we don't need to make that a formal academic thing. Have you run into resistance in that kind of vein?
No, not to date. You know, if the research at the Christian Studies Centers is able to grow, who knows? But right now we're so small, I don't think that there's any resistance.
Well, that's great. Well, one of the things I want to do as we wrap up here is just talk about one of the last things is what do you see, this is obviously not prophetic, but like what would you predict is going to happen in, as far as some of these trends around Christianophobia in the years? Do you see it increasing? Do you see it kind of leveling out? Or do you see it maybe even possibly decreasing? What do you think the research shows?
You know, I tend to think that for the near future, it's going to increase. And then there'll be some leveling out at some point, obviously. And I think Christians have to start thinking long term, that we're not going to immediately reduce it dramatically. But by having a Christian community, by living out our values, by developing our intellectual sphere as well as other spheres and economic sphere, we can outlast this Christianophobia and then, you know, at some point in the future, be a thriving force once again. But I think short-term, yeah, it's gonna increase.
Well, it's been a fascinating conversation. My guest today has been Dr. George Yancey. He's the author of Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. We'll have links to that in the show notes for our Impact 360 Institute podcast. But George, I just really want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today and your important work in this area. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
For more information about our on-campus worldview and leadership experiences for students and our accessible online courses like Explore Truth and Explore the Resurrection, visit impact360.org. Impact 360 Institute. Know. Be. Live.